Good morning. Sunday, November 24th, 12 o'clock p.m. We had a wonderful meditation this morning. And if you haven't done so, stop. That means, of course, stop. Stop taking thought. Stop reasoning. Stop trying to understand. Stop trying to do something. Stop trying to know something. Today's talk is about the hidden manna. Chapter 5 in Leave Your Nets, Hidden Manna. And in the margin, I wrote pretty much the thesis for the whole talk. The real hidden manna is that impersonal mind, impersonal consciousness, which functions when you stop. You see, when you stop, I begin. Now, this chapter is, in fact, this entire book contains talks from Joel where the Christ is offering a way for the students to come up higher from metaphysics into mysticism. Anytime you read something that says we need to stop these affirmations and denials that we used in the beginning and come up higher, you know that you're being lifted into the mystical. And we have a place where we hang out. We have a website, and it's called Mystical Principles. And the principles of that website, ever since several years ago, that Sharon sent me a copy of the Kai Lewis study series, and I understood what Joel was trying to do with those students. Ever since then, the talks and everything has been geared toward our coming up higher into the mystical realm. So, again, the real hidden manna is that impersonal mind which functions when you stop. It begins, ours is a new dimension. We do not seek the world. We abide at the center of our being. Behold the glory of God, and let the world come to us, which means, as you will see in this chapter, we seek the invisible, and let the visible appear as it will. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. Down here a little farther, Joel says, the whole import of the message of the infinite way could well be summed up in that term, hidden manna. Hidden manna. How like that expression is to the other statement of the Masters. My peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Not physical health or material wealth, not a new home or a new automobile, not anything that the world gives, but my peace. My peace is something the world would not recognize if it came face to face with it. And on the next page, he says, here you have a hidden mystery. Peace, such as the world gives, comes to you because of external circumstances or conditions. I guess we all know by now that money has wings, and you can get a big chunk of it, and maybe you have a big chunk of it, and have it deposited in several bank accounts or in property or stocks, and it can just take off and melt away within a week or two. So the peace that you get from having a little nest egg behind you, well, I can guarantee you, if you're on this path and you haven't yet switched your reliance from the visible to the invisible, well, the visible is going to melt away. You're going to get a little nudge to shift. You see, the mystical realm is the invisible reality. And it comes in a moment you think not. It comes in a moment you stop. You stop being you. And you stand stock still. That's another way of saying it. You wait. You listen. You're receptive. You create a vacuum. These are all the same thing. You stop. And into that vacuum, into that absence of the little self, the visible self, into the absence of that visible self comes the invisible self. And you have the conscious awareness of the living Christ. Now, who can be aware of Christ? Can the human being? Can the human mind? No, the human mind can only be aware of a material self. The human mind can only be aware of matter. So if you are consciously aware of the movement of Christ, if you feel the Spirit move over the face of the deep in your consciousness, if you hear the still small voice whispering, "I am here," fear not. I will never leave you nor forsake you. If you see something, you catch a glimpse of something you never saw before, something wonderful, something called I. In all of those realizations, you are standing in Christ, and Christ is in you. And for all intents and purposes, you are the Christ. Now, this is not something you can go tell your family members. "Oh, guess what I realized today?" You can't tell your neighbors. You can't tell your coworkers. You can't tell anybody, really. But you won't have to tell them. The more you dwell in this Christ, and if you don't like Christ, I've known some Jewish people that did not like to use the term Christ, and they didn't like to speak the word God or write it. That's okay. It can be called it. It can be called I. It can be called I am. It can be called I am that I am. It can be called is. It can be called a presence. It can be called a spirit. You see, nobody's locked out. It doesn't matter what your religion was. As you approach this mystical life, no one is locked out, except for he that continues to try to get the spirit to manifest corporeally. See, the human mind is all about the material world. And Joel, Christ in Joel, is trying to lift us into the mystical realm, which is all about the invisible kingdom. So, again, I say to you, the real hidden manna is that impersonal mind which functions when you stop. Peace, such as the world gives, comes to you because of external circumstances. if you have more health or wealth or a bigger home or a longer vacation. That may induce a temporary state of peace. But this good that comes to you from the external world today may be taken from you tomorrow. And that's what we were saying. So, my peace is different from that. My peace is an inflow and an outflow from within your own being. So it's never dependent on anything. It's self-created, self-maintained, and self-sustained. My peace comes from a hidden spring within. And when it comes, the good that it brings will never leave you. In other words, the peace that is realized within will forever establish harmony in your outer world. This is the hidden manna. This is the meat to which the Master referred when he said, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. And man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word which proceedeth out of the mouth of God. You see that? More and more and more we are to live in this invisible realm, watching, beholding, as the incorporeal presence functions your life, appears out here. If your need is transportation, it can very well appear as a new car. I've had that happen when I wasn't even looking for one. And I watched it get paid off within a year, a little over a year. Now, if it's health, if it's life you need, it will appear as life, as health. If it's a companion that you are to have, to walk through this life with, it will appear as that companion. Without seeking, I'm telling you, without looking anywhere. I told this story before, but I'll tell it again. My wife and I are coming up on 30 years of marriage. Now, as I say to everyone, she's not perfect, but she's perfect for me. And I mean that wholeheartedly. All right, so how did it happen that we got together? Well, we lived in a town that was about 8,000 people. Now, that's not many. If you've lived in Los Angeles like I have, where there's several million, 8,000 is almost empty. And we went to a certain class in a certain church we both attended. And we lived in this town for 10 years and never met. Now, how is that possible? It gets even better than that, because her spiritual advisor was married to my spiritual advisor. That's someone you go to when you have a problem and you're not sure how to sort through it, and they help you point out the principles, and you live by those principles, and your problem is met. So, you would think that we would have met on accident, maybe pulling into their driveway at the same time. You would think we would have met at this meeting at the church. But what happened was this. I got a job that was, it just ate up all my days and evenings, and I couldn't attend anymore. This job required me to work two back-to-back days, 14 hours a day, 28 hours in 2 days. That's a lot of standing. And I didn't feel like going anywhere when I got home. Or I got home after this meeting at the church let out. So I wasn't able to attend that class anymore. And she was busy attending that class. Whereas the year before that, she got a job managing a Holiday Inn, and she was busy all kinds of hours. And I was busy in the class. so we didn't meet. We were like out of sync. And she had certain relationships, and I had a marriage that was falling apart, and neither one of us was seeking. And I've talked to her and listened to her, and she says she was on her side of town, and she was praying, God, I don't know how to pick anybody, so I'm going to quit. I'm just going to stop. You pick someone if I'm to have someone. And she quit looking. And I was on my side of town after the divorce was final, and I was saying the same thing. I guess I'm just going to walk with you, teach some classes, and that's it. There's nobody that can put up with me. Well, what happened? I needed to find a place to live. The place that I was living was closing its doors, let's say. So I went back to work, and I called a friend of mine, and he said, why don't you rent an apartment from this lady? And I said, okay. And I called her, and she said, sure, I'll show you the apartment. She was fixing up an old house and turning it into apartments. So I went down there, and I talked to her, and she showed me the apartment. She said, how long would you like it for? And I said, well, here's the first month's rent. And I gave it to her, and I found myself an apartment. And I also found myself a lady that we were to grow close together. And, you know, I don't tell anybody I said this, but we tell all of our friends that they need to take a year and get to know each other. And that's not what we did. We didn't take a year. 30 days after we met, we were married, and now it's coming on 30 years. But the point of this whole story is neither one of us was seeking. We both gave up the search. That's it. I'm going to be alone. Now, God, you take over. And when we did that, when we stopped, God took over. And then we met. Here we'd been in the same town for 10 years and never laid eyes on each other. But when it was time, when we were ready, when we were following rather than trying to lead, we met, and it was perfect, and she's perfect for me. All right, so I tell you that because I've lived this principle in more ways than one. So, when he says here, my peace comes from a hidden spring within, and when it comes, the good that it brings will never leave you. If you are thinking the good that it brings is an automobile, or a wife, or a husband, or a new lung, you're mistaken. That wasn't what God brought us. God brought us the inner hidden manna. God brought us my peace, my presence. And resting in that, after giving up taking thought, after giving up trying to manage, we rested, both of us. And then she appeared, and I appeared. And the two became one. And we've walked in this oneness for 30 years. So, God doesn't give you a material good. You've got to get out of that mindset. I know we all started out with affirmations and denials, myself included. I put a picture of a Dodge Caravan up on my refrigerator where I could see it every day. And I affirmed every day something like, my good is mine and comes to me daily or something. You know, I don't remember now. But it was an affirmation about that Dodge Caravan. And sure enough, in 6 months or so, I was driving a Dodge Caravan, a nice one with captain chairs and a place for my coffee, and wonderful. I loved it. But we are not in metaphysics. Well, we are in metaphysics. We're trying to move out of metaphysics into the mysticism that the infinite way provided, showed us. So this whole book is about moving into that mysticism. So the good that God has is invisible. Life becomes entirely different once you catch hold of the great truth that the word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God is the substance of life. So we can use that word, the substance of life. You don't like the word God, you don't like the word Christ, you don't like the word Spirit, you can use substance. The word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God is the substance, the invisible substance of life. Now, John lived in this mystical consciousness, and his entire book is flowing out from that mystical consciousness. What is the mystical consciousness? Something mysterious and weird? No. The mystical consciousness is your consciousness as you behold the invisible, in whatever way it appears to you. Like we said a little while ago, it can be a still small voice, it can be a presence, it can be an awareness, a conscious awareness, it can be an impression, it can be a movement, it can be a fizzing, as Joe likes to say. It can be anything that is the invisible appearing to you. All right? So John lived in this invisible, and we are going to live in this invisible, some now, some later. So John is speaking out from there, or the Christ through John, or the essence through John, or the substance through John is saying, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Just think, if you can find a way to stop, if you can find that absence of self, you will have a meat that the world knows not of. You will have a hidden manna. You will experience an invisible essence, an invisible substance, an invisible presence. And so, John again, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. I love that, living. Again, I am the bread of life. Again, to him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. And what is the hidden manna? We said it at the very beginning. The real hidden manna is that impersonal mind which functions when you stop. So, he says, you will not judge your supply by how many dollars you have, but by how much God contact you have. That's the hidden manna. Whatever good is to appear in your life must appear as the result of the activity of truth in your consciousness. And hopefully we all know now that the activity of truth in your consciousness is not sitting around and affirming. It's not saying, and we did this in the beginning, and it was right that we did. It was how we learned the letter. You don't discard the letter. The letter of truth and the spirit of truth walk hand in hand. So, many of us walked around saying, thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. Said it 300, 500 times a day. And experienced some of that grace. Maybe our income was doubled. The right person came along. We found a new house, you know. Slowly that begins to stop working. That's what Joel says in the Infinite Way book, the original first book. He says it stops working, or it doesn't work like it once did. And then we find out we have a problem. We're trying to pull the invisible into the visible. And not only that, we're trying to funnel it into these outlines, these molds we're holding up. Fill this mold. I want a new car. Fill this mold. I want a new foot. Fill this mold. I want a new house. I want a new spouse. We are coming up higher where this invisible substance, this essence, this presence knows our need before we do. And we're learning to trust it and dwell in it. So, the activity of truth in your consciousness is not repeating the letter of truth 300 times a day. What is it? I wrote down here what it is. It's not thinking statements of truth. That's not an activity of truth in consciousness. I am the truth. I, the Christ, the movement of spirit in consciousness. This is the activity of truth. The movement of truth. When you hear that still small voice, when you catch an inspired vision of truth, you suddenly, you know it. When you feel that movement across the waters of your consciousness, when you feel the spirit descend upon you, the presence envelops you or flows through you, this is the activity. This movement, this inner movement, is the activity of truth, because I, that presence, am the truth. And that's the activity of truth. And when you feel it, you and the Father are one. You are that movement. For all intents and purposes, I and that movement are one. You are living out from the invisible, from the hidden manna. You see? Now, I'm not covering very much. We're almost halfway through. Got a lot to go. Maybe I can talk faster. You will not come into the presence of God carrying with you any desire for God to do something, be something, or get something for you. You must consciously make the sacrifice of everything external. You see? You remember probably quite plainly Joel saying, we do not fear, hate, or love anything in the external realm. I know that's hard. I know it. I know it's hard. How do you love someone when you can't love the external person? How do you love someone when you can't love the personal sense of self? Well, I've experienced the answer. I wrote it in the first book, Steps to Mystical Experience, and I'm not sure the chapter probably has to do with love, but anyway, I wrote it in there. You have to, that's it, loving the one in the many, not the many in the one. We have to pull our attention. I don't care if it hurts. You've got to do it if you want to go forward. You move your attention and your affection off of the visible and on to the invisible. This essence that appears as your significant other, you love it through them. And it can be done. I have done it. I'm not saying I do it all the time. I forget. I fall back into the personal. I'm still here. When I leave, you'll know I got it. I finally got it. Okay. So, we are learning to live in the invisible, to function from the invisible, to dwell on the invisible, to love the invisible, to commune with the invisible. So to emphasize it, he says, everyone who has sought God and missed the way has missed it because he has sought God for a reason, for healing or for supply or happiness and so on. So he says on the next page, consciously do this within your own consciousness. Now, Don't just repeat these words. This has to be an inner experience where you make the shift from wanting God, the Spirit, to demonstrate corporeally. You're trying to get an incorporeal spirit to demonstrate corporeally, and that is the battle of the flesh and the spirit. You're going to make a change where you only want the incorporeal experience, capital E. So do this within. I want my life to be lived by every word, every movement that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. Then the miracle will follow. Okay, but that's an attitude, it's not words. True, the Christ will appear as some human avenue. Your good can come to me through, can come to you through me, and my good can come to me through you, but mine will not come from you, and yours will not come from me. No, we'll be looking to the invisible. Now, there's nothing wrong with enjoying the forms out here in which the invisible appears. I enjoy my wife, but I also know the invisible is where my love is. And I enjoy my car, my new car. I have a Toyota Corolla Hybrid. It's wonderful. I really like it. They did a great job. 53 miles to the gallon, so I feel a little better about not buying gas all the time. Anyway, I can enjoy it thoroughly, but that's not where my love and hate and fear lie. I no longer hate and fear anything. My love lies in the invisible, and I've told you that over and over. That happened way back in 1973 when I fell in love with God. But how did that happen? Well, my wife ran away with another guy, and I was forced to either find another woman or find God. And my spiritual advisor, before he passed, he said, look, most people would transfer their feelings to another woman, but you'd be just as dependent on the next one. The reason you're feeling all this pain is because of dependency. It's not because of love. Dependency is heavy. Love is light. I took that into my closet, and I transferred my feelings to God. And I fell in love with God, and nothing will ever come before that. Nothing. I'm not saying that I haven't made the mistake of focusing on the material, because I have. But underneath, that underlying love is there forever. And that's what he says. That which comes stays forever. But what does God have? Life and love. So, as less and less you personalize your good and the avenues through which your good is to come, and let the Christ appear, thus will it flow. You see that? All right. On the next page, he says, nothing can stay God's hand, not even your sins of omission or commission. Nothing you can do or ever have done will prevent the flow of God. Now listen to this. It is not dependent on how much reading, church going, studying, and how much meditating you do. That inner movement is not dependent on any of that. How could the invisible be dependent on the visible? It's a joke. All of these things are merely aids to opening your consciousness. That is the only function they play. Any spiritual activity in which you may engage is not for the purpose of gaining the good of God, he says. It is for the purpose of enabling you to learn how to open your consciousness to the inflow. You see why he says in the Kailua Study Series that we are to have 30 meditations a day in which we meditate for a minute or two or three at the most. It is to develop this habit of listening. It's to develop the ability to hear that still small voice. It is to be receptive so that we may receive Him. And as many as receive Him, to them gives He power to become the sons of God. Or, when you receive Him, you will have the awareness, the conscious awareness of the invisible flowing out as your outer experience. You will be the expression of the invisible, or the Son of God. So, he says, once you've experienced this invisible, do not go back to seeking your good from outside. Because after you have learned that the kingdom of God is within you, and that you must let it flow up from within to the without, if you then again go seeking it without, you create a deeper sense of separation than you had before. So don't do it, he says. Do not go back. All right? There are times when you are faced with the appearance of discord, inharmony, pain, lack, limitation. And the temptation is to go back to the metaphysical, isn't it? That's what he says. The temptation is to make a mental effort to indulge in vigorous thought-taking, in affirmations and denials, in order to achieve peace and harmony. Now he's trying to lift us up higher. This invisible presence in him, which is the invisible presence in you, is trying to lift you up. So it says, reverse that. Now, reverse that. And whenever there is an appearance of discord, relax. Make no mental effort. Or, in my words, stop. Your good doesn't come to you by your striving and your efforts and your thought-taking. Now it comes to you from the depths of your being. This is the hidden manna. You are not to try to achieve a healing. You are to be still and let the still small voice take over. You see, you're to be still and let this invisible, impersonal mind take over. When you're trying to achieve a healing through affirmations and denials, that's the personal mind. It cannot heal. It never has. But what about this impersonal mind that functions when you stop? What about that I? He says, you are to let the Spirit descend upon you. You are to rest or stop. Now, there's one of his spontaneous meditations here, but I've read it before. This italic section and a couple of paragraphs after that is all included in the chapter Fear Not in the book The Art of Meditation. And I don't know why Lorraine put it back in here, but she did. And it's a nice meditation. My grace is sufficient for thee. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Why struggle as if you had to hold on to me? Why struggle as if you had to seek for me and search for me? I am in the very midst of thee, closer than breathing and nearer than hands and feet. So, I'm not going to read the whole thing. We'll read the end of it here. Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit. You can do all things through me, the Christ of your being. Let the Christ be the avenue through which you are fed, clothed, housed, and comforted, healed, protected, maintained, and sustained. Now here is one of those instructions. Whenever an appearance of discord comes upon your horizon, relax, rest, be at peace, and stop. In the assurance of the divine presence within you, trust the I, trust the Christ at the center of your being. believe that there is a presence whose only function is to bless you, to be a benediction to you, and to be the instrument of God's grace. Trust it. Now, to him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. What are you overcoming? You're overcoming a personal sense of self. You're overcoming a personal sense of mind, that which wants to affirm and deny. You're overcoming a personal sense of universe. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna, which is the same exact thing as to as many as receive him, to them will he give power to become the sons of God. That's the same experience. That manna is hidden within you. It is invisible to the world, unknowable to common sense, incomprehensible to human beings, to the human mind. It is hidden from the world. Where is it hidden? In the depths of your own experience. Deep down within you, there is a meat that the world does not know. There are untapped springs of water and hidden manna. All of this is embedded within your own being. Now, you remember in the Kailua Study series, he says we approach the mystical and we recognize and realize that we have to come up higher than the metaphysical. We have to stop making affirmations and denials. We have to step out of that personal sense of self and its approach to truth in order to experience truth itself. You can remember that from Beyond Words and Thoughts in the chapter Truth Unveiled. He says you have to come up over the mind. It doesn't mean that you won't have thoughts. It does mean that my thoughts are not your thoughts, saith the Lord. Now, another way of saying hidden manna, which he hinted at in this chapter, is my peace. And so I'm going to go over to a different book for a moment. This is a chapter called Peace from the book Consciousness Unfolding. I love this here. Listen to this. First, the quote from John again. He's the mystical disciple. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. And the chapter begins, and listen to this. This is the whole secret in a paragraph. My peace, the peace of Christ. More healings have been brought about through absolute silence than through all the arguments metaphysicians have thought up in the whole history of the world. When you are called upon for help, sit down and get at peace. Think no thoughts. Just sit and wait. Wait, he says, and I say stop. Be patient. Wait for the peace of Christ to descend upon you. In that moment of peace, without a word, you will witness healing. That's the whole secret. Attain the silence, and I will follow. He says to the students, we are now in a different position from the one in which we found ourselves when we were functioning with treatments. We have come to the place in consciousness where we are ready for the next higher step, and that's all of you, my friends. Even if mental argument, affirmations, and denial were necessary to us in the early days of our work, we can now leave such forms alone. Learn to sit down and stop. Whether the case is sin, disease, death, unemployment, whether or not it seems serious, sit down and stop. Or he says, sit down and relax. Do not try to handle it. Do not try to work on it. Do not try to treat it. Sit back and in silence create a vacuum for God, for the Christ to rush in. That's wonderful. It's just absolutely wonderful. This is the secret to experiencing, to having that capital E experience of the presence of I. We must stop all such futile efforts. The human mind is not the Christ. And there you go. Metaphysics is for the human mind. Mysticism is for the Christ. Which do you want governing your affairs? Choose this day whom you will follow, mind or impersonal mind, Christ. For many years, mental efforts have been tried. The words of the Bible are, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways." What good then is all this thinking that we have been doing? The truth of the matter is that the human mind plays no part in healing. The only factor in spiritual healing work is the Christ. My peace I give unto you. In that peace that passeth understanding, passes your mind, in that quiet, in that stillness, the peace of God, the power of God is made manifest, and it does the work. This is still this chapter, peace, from Consciousness Unfolding. I just wanted to read a few of these because it emphasizes rising up into mysticism. It emphasizes prayer and meditation through or into the Christ, into the Spirit. Healing is not brought about by the human mind. It is done by the state of consciousness imbued with the Christ. And I wanted to look up that word called imbued. And so I looked in the Webster Dictionary and it says to tinge deeply, to dye, to cause to absorb as clothes thoroughly imbued with black, or to tincture deeply, to cause to become impressed or penetrated, as to imbue the minds of youth with good principles. And that goes back to what I was told very early in my journey. My first spiritual advisor said, "Look, the kingdom of heaven is within you, but not within like you open the front door and walk within the house. No, not that kind of within. It's not within your body. No, this kind of within is such that when you take blue and red and you mix them together, they become purple." And so within means imbued. The kingdom of heaven is imbued in your consciousness. And when you rest and relax, when you say to that material sense of self, stop, and you stand stock still, and you feel that movement, you are imbued with the Christ, or the presence. Okay? Now, we should not go on for the next 10 years as we have been doing up to now, just talking about God. The time has come now when we must experience God. Let us not pass lightly over this part of the teaching, because it is the most important part of it all. We must seek God while we are yet in the flesh, and that means you and me, individually, here and now, without waiting to die. We must experience God through our periods of silence, our periods of peace. So on the next page he says, begin now to change your old basis of treatment. If necessary, do it drastically. You see, you remember he said in the Kalua study series, this may cause you to have a battle. He says, you may have a battle with me. You may have a battle with the infinite way. You've got to get through this battle and get to the other side, where you find out how to rest mystically in that spiritual consciousness within. So he says, if necessary, do it drastically. Do it by forcing yourself to take no thought. I am asking you to come into a higher consciousness of the presence of God, a consciousness higher than that which you can attain through the action of the human mind. Let us move a step higher into this state of consciousness in which we would be if we were students of Jesus, who said, take no thought, or stop. You are a witness watching the state of peace do the healing. Be a beholder of the activity of the Christ or God. Watch it work in you and through you and ultimately as you. Just sit in a state of receptivity, relaxed, in a state of silence, in a state of peace. Let that peace permeate your whole being, and when you have felt that, sit with a listening attitude. Watch the light dispel the darkness. Watch, watch, watch. And I think there's something else here at the end. It is your own individual consciousness when your consciousness is imbued with silence and with peace. All you have to do and all you will ever be called upon to do from now on is to achieve that sense of peace. Okay, but that's not just being quiet. Some people feel that all they have to do is just become quiet and restful and relaxed, and they've done it. That is incorrect. When he says all you have to do is attain that peace, he means all you have to do is, sure, attain that peace first. Come to the place where you can close your eyes and stop, or even with your eyes open, you've found a way to pull back within your being and stop. Have no thought. Just listening. It really does get to the place where you can stop wherever you are, even while you're moving around physically. It's wonderful. This state of receptivity, this vacuum within, this listening. It's wonderful. And when you do that, that's not it. You're not done. And if you go over carefully the Kalua study series, chapter 10 and 12 and 23 and 7 and 8, you will see that he said it there very plainly. It's not finished until you feel that inner movement. It's not finished when the human mind has settled itself down. No, that's just the first part. Okay, so when the human mind has settled down and you've found a sense of peace, then you're perfectly free to say, Father, reveal thyself. or Spirit, flow forth whithersoever thou wilt, or Speak, Father, thy servant heareth, or God is. You're perfectly free to say one sentence, one scripture, one thought, which reminds you to stand still. And your meditation is never done until you feel that inner movement, until you feel that peace descend, as he says, the Spirit descend upon you. Am I making this plain? Do you see where we've come from and where we have to go to? You remember in Beyond Words and Thoughts, in that wonderful chapter, Incorporeality of God, Man, and Universe, at the end, Joel says we have to bring forth invisible supply, invisible companionship, invisible health, invisible life, right out of the invisible. And the human mind can't do that. Just sit down and start thinking, and let me see if you can pull that out. You can't. You can pull out thoughts. You can pull out ideas, more concepts. Yippee. Only the Christ can reveal the invisible. And so your meditation is not complete until the Christ have moved, the Spirit has moved, the presence has moved within you. And it moves as a feeling, not as a thought. You sense it, or you hear it. But it's totally different from anything you've ever thought. There's a vibration that goes with it. And that's all I'll say on that. Now, we had a question a week or two ago. How do you pour forth health? And the answer came on November 12th. And I wrote it in my journal. And I'll share it with you now. Every time you are presented with the person asking for help, and we get that dozens of times, don't we? Many, many times on our email list, someone will ask for help. Please lift me up. Please lift up the Christ. Please help me. So we have the opportunity to practice this principle that I'm going to reveal now. Every time you are presented with a person asking for help, you know that God never made a person. This is hypnosis, and it was not made. Therefore, you stop. You listen. You are receptive to God. You may say, Father, reveal thyself. And when you feel the movement of omnipresence, you have poured out health, spiritual health. You've poured out the temple not made with hands. You've poured out the temple made by God, or the life made by God. Every time that you go into meditation in response to someone asking for help, and you find that peace within, and you stop any mental activity, and you rest, and you feel the movement, you have poured out health, spiritual health. Not physical health, you've poured out spiritual health. And that's the answer to the question. How do I pour out health? You don't. I, within you, the invisible, move through you. And this is the pouring out of spiritual health, also known as the hidden manna. This is the hidden manna. And it has come that you might have life, and life more abundantly. And it has come that they might have life, and life more abundantly. Thank you for bringing this forth, because it's where I live and where I want to live more and more and more. In the invisible, dwelling in the invisible. And I'm going to read this one more time. If you'll be patient with me. The thesis at the beginning of our chapter said this: the real hidden manna is that impersonal mind or self which functions when you stop. Many blessings to you who find this hidden manna. Thank you.